You're the average of the 5 podcast shows you listen to the most. Learn to run your business well with the SIA Business Show, where our host Sayed Irfan Ajmal interviews entrepreneurs, marketers, and speakers of all colors and creeds, and reveals their biggest secrets and lousiest mistakes.
Hi everyone, this is your host Sayed Irfan Ajmal, and in this episode of the SIA Business Show, we will be speaking to Faisal Khan. I met him a few years ago in my hometown Peshawar at DYS, the Digital Youth Summit, and then we also happened to meet in Dubai maybe 2 years ago. He is an extremely kind, helpful, and supportive mentor of sorts to me and many others, and obviously he's an extremely busy person, and so we will try to keep it keep this session very focused and very quick. So Faisal Khan is an independent banking, payments, and fintech consultant. He helps companies all around the globe solve their complex banking and payments related issues, and of course people like me try to annoy him off and on with all of their weird and annoying and, you know, maybe not so relevant questions. Faisal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So where are you currently? Where are you based at?
So like everyone else, I'm quarantined right now, and that my city of quarantine is Istanbul, Turkey.
Okay. Well, I hope that you stay safe and that, you know, everything with you at home and at work continues to be great. So tell us a bit about your background. I do know that you are originally from Karachi, I believe. So tell us, you know, what were you like 10 or 15 years ago and how you went into starting Faisal Khan and Company?
So I've got my primary, my terminal education in bachelor's and master's in electrical engineering. It's in a field called electromagnetics and quantum electrodynamics. So not much of a future there, if you ask me, if you're not practicing engineering. So when I came back to Pakistan, I started a technology company related to, wanted to become an ISP, an internet service provider. Mm. And this is circa 1995, late 95, early 96. Ended up making a web development company, then an infrastructure company, basically a web hosting company. Nice. Ran that for about 16, 17 years. And by 2010, just decided to quit one day. Was sick and tired of that business, sick and tired of IT, sick and tired of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, finding out some server somewhere in the world is not working or what have you. And I just quit. And I took a sabbatical for about a year and a half, about, I think I would say about 14, 15 months, nearly a year and a half. And payments was very important to me. Something was very interesting to me because most of my clients were financial services clients, banks in Pakistan and in the region. Mm. So I studied that for a year and I started that company. And this time I said, you know what? I'm not going to be working for anyone where I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, etc. So it's a consulting. We solve problems. That's what we started with. We still solve problems. And we have been running since basically 2011. 2009 is when I got the idea. I mean, I started it, but formally 2011. So it's been theoretically about almost 11 years, but otherwise we're approaching our 10th year next year.
So, I mean, you did mention that you started to with a focus on solving problems, but it seems that you pivoted. So number one, what were some examples of these problems? And number two, what is it that then you started doing instead?
So the original problems we started solving was something very simple, you know, how to develop a software for payments, or how to have a mid-level system to initiate payments, how to have APIs, how to have web services open so that developers can link to it. But that's really not a complex thing. It's a pretty simple thing to do. Well, relatively simple. I shouldn't say simple. Everything has its own complexities.
Yeah.
In going forward, then I said, you know, the bigger scope in payments comes from things like cross-border payments. And cross-border payments are very complex because it involves multiple currencies, multiple countries, multiple geographies, multiple players, multiple laws. So then the pivot was learning all the cross-border payments. In order to learn the cross-border payments, I took a slightly different advantage or route. And my route was I read up on the payment laws in all the different countries. So I read up the payment laws in the US, and they have 50 different payment laws, one for each state, and not to mention the 6-7 different federal payment laws. I read the same thing for Canada, the EU, the UK, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, you name it. And understanding the legality of it really made me understand how the system would work, because I had an engineering background. Understanding processes, flows, diagrams, systems, etc., was pretty easy, and coming from a tech background, that was pretty easy. But understanding how it's architected together, how it's put together, how do you structure the deal together, was the pivot, and that's where I sort of pivoted to, and that's what we do today.
Awesome. So how many team members are there within your company? Like, you know, core team members and, you know, sort of the partners.
16 right. today total.
Right.
And we are, as you know, 100% remote company.
Right. So speaking of being remote, what are the biggest benefits and what are the biggest challenges which, you know, many of the people who are working in a typical 9-to-5 job, and they might say, okay, I will just start working from home. But, you know, you probably know it better than me that it's not that simple. Not to put words in your mouth, but you have to be more disciplined, and there are a lot of other unforeseen challenges, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, you have to treat it properly. You have to have a space, you have to have a place you call office, you have to have that discipline. So it's a lot about discipline rather than challenges. And that's the biggest thing you have to face. You have to be very disciplined about your work. This is a work, I'm going to work, I'm not going to fool around. And that was the basic thing. And everyone that we hired sort of understood that part. Listen, it requires discipline. We have to do this. We will not, And we will certainly make sure that no one in a house looks down upon us that just because we're working from the dining table or something like that. Oh yeah, you know, the fuzool betha hua kaam kar or whatever. Yeah. You know, nothing like that. By the way, can I say something in Urdu if I want to?
It's okay. We will try to add some captions in there. Okay. Your sayings are always funny, so I won't stop you.
So what I said in Urdu was, you know, like, what's this loser doing on the dining table sitting there with his laptop? Yeah. You know, so the people at home take it differently, and that should not be the case. In this day and age, the COVID-19 day and age, I think, you know, one should thank them that everyone now is taking work from home seriously, and what a challenge it represents. The biggest challenge, like I said, is discipline. What I miss about the actual company is, you know, there is a certain high you get from brainstorming with colleagues in front of you on the table, where you have a whiteboard and you can share and you can look at ideas and you can ruffle the papers, or when you six of you are sitting on a desk and you're working something and you show something to someone on you know, that is there. But I think the advancement in tools is so much now that they have diminished that need to a very large extent. They haven't eliminated it, they've diminished it. So if you are lucky enough to work in a field where you can work from home, where you can work remotely, where you can work without the need of being physically present because you have to sign some paper or something, then I think you're really blessed, because in this day and age, all the right technology is there for you to do it. You know, I remember when I started my thing in 2009, I went out to buy a printer, and the multifunction printer I bought, you know, the guy very coolly said, oh, it also comes with a fax machine. I said, brother, no one uses a fax machine anymore, not in 2009, and certainly not going to happen 20 years, 10 years from now. And look at that. Today, if I even show many people a fax machine, the actual original facsimile machine, many people won't have an eye how to operate it, you know?
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So the challenges are basically discipline. And discipline starts with having a place you call work, and that timing and that zone that's defined as work and respected by everyone working from home.
Yeah.
I.e. your family.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that I've seen at least some, 100% remote companies doing is having a regular, real life meetup. It can be very expensive for a lot of the companies out there. But like, for instance, Time Doctor, who also runs staff.com, They have, I think, like 80 or 100 team members, and they do an yearly meetup. And I think that can also help with, you know, seeing the other person not as this, you know, robot that you can give instructions to, but as a full human being that you can chat with and joke around with or play games with. Would you agree?
Totally. We do try to meet once a year. The first person I hired remotely, I did not even meet her for a couple of years. Imagine that.
Yeah.
So we do try to meet. One thing we have disciplined when we started this company is I was very much inspired by Jason Fried, who wrote the book called Remote. Mm-hmm. Jason Fried is the CEO of he's the CEO of 37 Signals.
37 Signals. The agency, the famous Signal
agency. It's a company that wrote FreshBooks, right? The invoices, Fresh Invoices, FreshBooks.
Right, right. Okay. Called.
And there's another guy who is the CEO of Automattic. And Automattic is the company behind WordPress. And WordPress is 100% remote. They have no offices.
Awesome.
And when I read about their transformation, we at that time couldn't afford an office because when I had started the new company, I couldn't afford an office. So I didn't have an office. It was not that I wanted to be a remote company by choice.
Yeah.
It was my remote company because I didn't have the money to start an office at that point in time. And I didn't want to start an office at that point in time. I said, you know, let's see if we can work it out for remote for a few years and then we'll get an office. But then I read their statements and their understanding of what it means to work remotely and what it means to have, collaborative tools, et cetera. I just took off from there. I said, you know, no need for us. So for example, when we treat others as human beings, it's never that we have a robot. We are all colleagues. So we are literally horizontally equal in our, let's say, org chart.
Yeah.
We don't have a holiday policy. So in the sense that, you know, we don't say, oh, you get 2 weeks off. You can get as many days off as you want in a year. It's all up to you. You want to take off for 3 months and go hiking in the Himalayas, do so. We have no issues with it. As long as you tell someone and as long as your task is handled by others, that's all. We don't have number of sick days or number of casual days. You want to take off, you take off. You're an adult. We have on our Slack channel something called AFK, BRB, away from today. And you just write over there, you know, not coming into the office today. That's it. You don't have to tell us. You're an adult. You probably have a good reason not to come.
So
it has worked perfectly.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you short, Faisal. So what I'm, you know, like with us, it's a very different type of remote company. So if I can tell you a bit, right now we have seven core team members, including me. And they have to track their time on hubstaff.com. I use it myself. Like I'm using it right now. And the project that I've selected is the SIA podcast. So I use it myself religiously. It's not like I'm trying to, you know, watch over them. I just think that it makes us more disciplined and more accountable to ourselves and to the rest of the team members. So, I mean, in your case, I do understand the flexibility that you give the team members. And we also, you know, like we have tried to make it more strict now with them where we are like, okay, most of the work that you are supposed to do in a week should be done during the weekdays, not on the weekends. So as a policy, we work just 5 days a week, but because we have flexible timings and some team members have an emergency or, you know, they want to go hiking or something during in the middle of the week or something. And then they work on the weekends. So we are now getting a bit more strict with that. But like, I mean, when you say that your team members are allowed to, you know, take 3 months off as long as someone else can, you know, manage the responsibilities that they have. So, I mean, has there been any instances where one of your team members actually went away for a long time? Like, were those conditions met where you are like, okay, inform someone and have someone do your tasks?
So, let me just say before this thing, you know, there are one thing that we decided to do is we decided not to take any work that has had a deadline.
Got it.
I don't work with deadlines because that's the reason we don't work weekends. In fact, in my company, it's forbidden to work on weekends.
Yes.
If we don't work more than 7 hours a day, it's forbidden to work that. I want a very strict work-life balance for my team.
Yeah.
And more importantly, if someone is going to abuse the privilege, and there will be abuses, then they will be either warned or they will be asked to leave.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, we have never had that issue.
Hmm.
We have had people say, hey, listen, I'm going out for this thing or I'm going out for that thing. And that's totally cool. We have really never had someone who's gone out for 3 months. But 30 days is unheard of. I mean, it's not that it's unheard of. It, you know, people have gone out for 30 days. Say, you know what, I want my break. And usually they take their break for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and they come back. It's okay. And I have had enough of a break. I want to come back.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there is no number to meet, right? You can take off whenever you want. You don't feel like working next week. You don't feel like working next week. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think we're in a very, very unique position that we don't have deadlines. We don't have deadlines to meet. It's because we do something, you know, like I said, when we set up the company, the problems, if it's a complex problem, then you get to dictate the terms.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So if no one can find a solution and you're the only one who's able to find a solution for them, then you are in a very powerful position. And that's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the issues that I have experienced, Faisal, over the past few, I think a couple of years at the very least, is especially with hiring Pakistan-based employees. So we have team members working from, in fact, the last time when you and I met, one of the reasons I was there was to meet one of our team members who has been with us for 6 years now. And I have met her just twice. And that was the first time I was meeting her, like after like 4 years, right? And she appreciates it. She appreciates it. Most of the female team members, I know that you are also more inclined to working with, female colleagues or female team members. But the point I'm trying to say is, oftentimes, as soon as, especially Pakistan-based companies, when they realize, okay, this is a remote company, then they are like, okay, this is just some typical freelancers working from their home. And I don't know if this company will be there tomorrow or not. And then we have gone to the final round of interviews, and then they themselves or their families are like, no, you should have a real job, beta. You should work at Telenor and, work at Pepsi, even if they are paying you much lesser than these guys, even then. So have you experienced that in your stint as an entrepreneur?
Quite a few things you said there. So, I think going back, first of all,
okay.
first of all, going back, I think a lot of people will now change their opinion about work at home. So that may not, some of the arguments may not hold true after this COVID-19 period. And thankfully so, it took a pandemic for them to realize it, but still. we only hire females. We only hire women. And we only hire women typically from Pakistan. I have had a very good thing, and there's a reason why I hire women, because they are no nonsense. They do great work. They just don't cause problems. They solve problems. They solve the mess that I make. That's what I call them. and we have always slightly paid above the market rate. And once they are, and I shouldn't say this because now they'll know about it, but I think, they already know this thing. But, once they're addicted to this this higher salary and the comfort life and they don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
They don't want to give it up because they know what's out there. The alternative is much more harsh. So they work with their heart, mind, and soul into it, and amongst great loyalty and retention. So we've not had an issue. And if a customer questions us, I'm in the financial services space. Imagine talking to a very large corporation in the United States that's traded on the NASDAQ stock exchange that does sales of over $200 billion a year. And when they call you up to a Karachi number, and then they say, at that time I was in Karachi, and they say, well, how are you going to solve a problem for us when you're based in Karachi, Pakistan? And I tell them, I said, are you worried more about me being based in Karachi, Pakistan, or are you worried for a solution of your problem?
Yeah.
If me being in Karachi, Pakistan somehow affects the outcome of your solution, then, but the fact is that you jumped on a telephone call and called me because you're so desperate. In fact, when they were told about me, they said, listen, if you can get over the fact that he's based in Karachi, Pakistan, he can solve your problem. I said, what if I was based in Frankfurt, Germany? What if I was in Barcelona? What if I was in, you know, somewhere in Phuket in Thailand? Would you ask the same question? You probably wouldn't, you know? So how can I help you? You know, and very rarely has the phone been slammed on me or someone say, oh, I'm not dealing with someone from Pakistan. You know what? Fine. That's your prerogative. You came to me. I did not go to you. I have an inbound connection, meaning I don't go to clients. Clients come to us. That's the way we've structured our business. And when they come to us, we say, hey, respect our territory. Respect my shop. You're entering my shop. You don't like the price, leave. You don't like the owner, leave. You don't like the attitude, leave. But don't come into our shop and sort of, you know, disparage us or, you know, or discourage us or be rude to us. No one takes that.
And speaking of all these inbound leads, how do you manage that? How do you generate these inbound leads where they come to you rather than you cold calling them?
So everything you do is a question. And that's what, you know, people are going to Google for. They're typing a question. So what we've done is over the course, we've answered about 5,000 questions on Quora. We have about a couple of thousand on our own website. And we have quite a few thousand out there on multiple domains and websites that we own. So chances are, if you're looking for a question, you're typing this on Quora, you're typing this on Google, you're typing this somewhere, and we are getting that question. And how we get that question is because when we take a call with someone, it gets recorded. And when we record the call, we know exactly what you're talking to us. We know the exact phrase and mnemonics that you're using, and we use the very same in our SEO approach. So our inbound leads are coming because people have a problem. And when people are telling us about their problems, whether they take the solution from us or not, we proactively give those answers out. So more and more people keep coming in. And like I said, you know, if you want a website made, there are probably, what, I don't know, a million developers out there, or maybe 2 million, maybe 5 million. But if you want a special glass coating for a space aircraft in gold, they're probably what? Maybe less than 100 companies out there, maybe 50 companies. So likewise, if you want something done in the payment space, there may be a million people. But if you want what we do, there may be less than 10, 20. And I tend to dominate that. So it's a very specialized field. So the results, we buy ads on Google, etc., because no one buys those ads. No one knows about them. Because the terminology and the question and the nomenclature and the lingua franca, everything used is so unique. Google doesn't even have a price for it. So we pay very, very little and we are able to get the leads. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's really good. And yeah, I mean, you also have your podcast as well, right? Other than the fact that you have over 2,000 web pages and you have been a Quora top writer for you know, several years. So that should also help, right? The podcast.
I mean, the podcast helps. Everything helps. I mean, you know, writing an answer every day, or writing a blog post, or putting content out. Nowadays, I do a YouTube video every day. So,
yeah, you have been putting a lot of videos out there. I can see that there is a new video popping up in my YouTube feed every single day.
Yeah, so I do one every day. So we are probably now experimenting of doing two a day. So let's see. We'll see how it goes. I don't do any of the SEO. I don't do any of the things. When I say SEO, my SEO simply, what's the problem? And can I have that question answered in my video or in my content? I don't do the traditional SEO. You know, like people say, what's the keyword and what's the backlink and what? Never did that. The reason I never did that is because I don't believe in it, because I believe if you follow a specific route or a specific section, Google may slap you, Google may ban you, Google may do this to you. I just answer questions. There's nothing in that. Just a simple question and an answer, simple question and an answer. And it's not following any particular rule or rule set.
Google is every single year, they are focusing more and more on the searcher's intent, as in what was the question that led someone to, let's say, Faisal Khan's website, and did that person went back to the search results in, let's say, 5 seconds, or did they stay there for a bit of a longer time? And you know, if they stay there and there are other factors, then they're like, okay, Faisal Khan was able to satisfy this person with his answer. So then they're like, okay, let's give Faisal Khan more of more of our traffic for these kind of questions. So that's amazing that you have done so well with that. That's really good.
I learned something today, so thank you.
I had no idea about that. No, but you already knew it. You knew it, but I took advantage of my technical lingo yeah.
So we don't track. Are we ranked number one for this? Are we ranked number two for this? Are we ranked on the second page? If someone is desperate, they will find us. So we put the podcast out, we put the Quora out, we put the blog pages out, and we're doing the YouTube out. I'm hoping that somewhere in about a year or 2 years' time or 3 years' time, the YouTube channel will gather such a capacity and subscriber base that will be a very serious thing. YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. In many ways, I'm not claiming this, we dominate, or let's say we have an overarching importance on Google search results. The question to ask is, and we meaning Faisal Khan and company, the question to ask is, do we have the same or similar dominance on YouTube? And the answer was no. Originally, no, we did. We were nowhere there. So now we are publishing more and more and more videos. Again, no SEO done. Nothing. We don't follow all those beautiful, recommended, highly recommended guidelines for us for YouTube. Do this. Research your topic. Search your topic. Do this thing. Find out the traffic. Find nothing. We just. Whatever comes to our mind, whatever is being asked for us on telephone calls or through our clients, we make a YouTube video and we publish it. And that's it. We just don't care about the SEO part. I think that's what clients want. And by the way, so now when we go on calls, hey, how did you find me? Oh, I found you on YouTube. I found you on YouTube.
That's awesome.
Pretty cool.
That's amazing. And definitely a lot of people use YouTube to, learn about the new topic and so on. How much of your time is spent on all this content creation? Like, what percentage of your time is spent on that?
So this is a question, it's very difficult to answer, but I would say, let's say majority of my time, majority. Mm. And then people say, well, how do you work?
Yeah.
So there are two ways of working. Rather than working harder, we work smarter. It's a very, very important thing to understand. Yesterday, I was speaking to someone and she said that, she's going to sell something for $150. And I said, how much time will you spend on it? She said, I'll probably spend about 8 hours to 12 hours or maybe 20 hours of collective work to earn $150. I said, wow. I said, I would make a sale for 20,000 US. It would take 4 months for that 20,000 to realize. But the total time we will spend, from day one to 4 months, and after that, the 20,000 is given to me, the total would not be more than 10 hours. Wow. Or maybe 8 hours total.
Awesome.
That's working smarter, not harder. So, like I said, at the very top, there are very few people who can solve it. There's this very famous thing that, someone had a problem in their factory and some guy came and he took a hammer and he hit it and he was charged $1,000. He says, so it's the same thing. Knowing where to hit cost that person 999 rupees or dollars or whatever, and how to hit cost them $1. So it's knowing where to hit. So work smarter, not harder.
Yeah. So Faisal, would you say that then this is two things? Would you say that this has also to do a lot with you researching stuff, reflecting on all the problems, intuition, number one? And number two, the fact that you're creating that content is also helping you learn about, the same problem or another problem. You see what I mean?
So maybe deflect it off from me. Let's not take my example. Let's take the other example. The answer to your question is yes. I mean, obviously, you know, the more we create, the more we engage, the more we talk to. If you go out to people and you ask, what's your problem? What's your problem? What's your problem? What's your problem? They'll keep telling you. At some point in time, you'll start to see a basket full of one problems, a basket full of another problem, a basket full of another problem. And you say, you know what? I'm going to tackle this problem because it seems everyone has it. The people that we are talking to are not on the streets. They're very specified banking or payment experts. So when we ask them what their problem is via our content, via our engagement, we know what the problem areas are, and that's where we then do more research and get the answer. But I think if you listen to Dr. Atif Mia, who's a very famous economist, he's based in the US.
Yeah.
He said one thing, and this sort of comes back to me again and again, and it haunts me. It literally haunts me. I tell people, he says, you know why Pakistan will always have a deficit? And people say, oh, it's this. He said, no. Because Pakistan does not tackle the difficult problems. The output of its engineering or its services or its products or its export are simple problems. So when you start tackling the difficult problems, when you start tackling high-end engineering problems, when you start tackling high-end management problems, when you start tackling high-end content-related problems, where you're working smarter, where the dollar rate per hour is $800 rather than $8. That is the difference. That is where you can, and the people say, well, how can I get there? Well, the others are doing it. The Israelis do it. The Indians do it. Bangladeshis do it. People in Sri Lanka do it. People in Vietnam and Myanmar do it. What stops you? So think, don't grow horizontally. That's fine. For many people, horizontal growth is the best. You want 10,000 customers, go get 10,000 customers. But how about getting a customer that gives you 10,000? You know, that's the kind of customer you want. People say, well, you know, that's too much in one basket. Well, do you doubt your services that you will not be able to find another one and another one and another one? You know, we have customers, our average billable cycle, sales cycle went from something like $1,500 to a customer to $5,000 to $7,500, to $1,500 to $2,500 to $5,000 to $7,500 to $10,000 to $12,500 to $20,000. Now our market prices for some of our products are $35,000 to $40,000. And the industry I work in is banking and payments. You know, they deal in billions and billions of dollars daily. They don't need, so when you say, now it's $30,000, it's just a number to them. They'll just pay you.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very important number to them. But then you make a reputation. You know, there was this thing where someone said, you know, be so good that they cannot ignore you. First they laugh at you, and then they be so good that they cannot ignore you. I think the quote is something like that, right?
Yes.
Becomes, I think Steve Martin said that, the comedian, or maybe some actor said it. I don't even know who said it. But there's the quote, be so good so that they cannot ignore you, or they'll find you, or whatever. Be that. Just be that. Are you the very best in your industry? And if you're not, then strive to be that. No? If I can do it in Pakistan, and I was in Pakistan for a long, long time, and I did it from there with zero money, huh? I didn't have money. I was dead broke. I mean, my story is on Quora. You can go read it. By the time I hit 40, I was dead broke. So
I still remember that one picture of you where I think you were working from your bedroom with like a makeshift table or something. I think that was like when you were just starting out, right? So I still remember that. And it's amazing how much you have, mashallah, progressed over all of these years.
Never forget from where you came from.
Yeah.
Never forget that. And be thankful for the journey and the people you've met. Some people may have kicked at you. Some people may have spat on you. Some people may have cursed you or laughed at you. But you know what? Thank them nonetheless. Why? Because without that, you probably wouldn't be even over here. The thing that stops you from succeeding, I cannot tell you, is only this. It's your limitation. You know, you'll hear it again and again and again. Oh, it's your mind. And I used to think, bullshit. This is and until I started, and it is really your mind. It is mind over matter. The day you say I can do it, you can do it.
The biggest obstacle is our mind, and the biggest help that can help us. I mean, the biggest thing that can help us is also our mind, right?
Yep.
So would you suggest any specific, let's say, books or podcasts on mindset or anything that helped you guys in growing so much, mashallah?
I mean, you know, there's so many things one has read. You can't simply point a finger, but I did do one thing. I created, if someone is 31 or 32 years old, comes to me, I'm going to be 50 this year. So, you know,
mashallah.
And thank you. So someone 31, 32 years old comes to me and say, hey, listen, what life lessons can you give me? So I wrote the life lessons down. My life lessons. I said, you know, I wish I was 31 and I wish someone had given me this list.
Yeah.
Now, whether you act upon it or not is totally up to you. And that could be a separate podcast. So I actually plan to do a YouTube series in explaining those.
Yeah,
that
would be wonderful. Yeah. That one is on Quora, right? The life lessons one. I think it is.
No, it's not on Quora. Maybe, right. I don't know. Right. No, not that one. I made a better version, a much better version of that.
Okay, we will make sure to include it in the description of the podcast, yeah.
Sure. But the most important thing, I think, is people suddenly want a huge change. It doesn't happen that way. So think of a very simple example. If you want to do calligraphy, you can't do it on the first day. It'll take you, let's say, 80 days to do it. So first day, just scribble. It may not be the right scribble, but it'll be the scribble. Second day, practice, but small increments, very small increments. And after 80 days, you'll be doing a beautiful calligraphy. Yeah. Atomic Habits is a book I highly, highly recommend everyone should read.
I will definitely check it out. Yeah. Atomic Habits.
So it is a great, great book. It's written by this gentleman. Oh, what's his name? Hold on. James Clear.
Right.
James Clear, Atomic Habits. And it has, in simple understanding terms, and this is not just a book that just has a lot of, you know, hoo-hoo-ha-ha-ha-ha. It actually tells you, at the end of the chapter, do this step. Tear this page out and do this every day. It has an exercise program for you on how to do it and how to achieve it. I cannot tell you what a life changer this book is. A life changer. But you have to do it every single day. That's the commitment. You have to do it every single day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it'll change your life.
Yeah. I recently read something just similar to the calligraphy example that you mentioned. So I think it was Brendan Burchard, the high performance habits expert, I think. So what he said was, you don't have to expect you cannot create a masterpiece every single day, but make sure that you have put some oil on the canvas every single day. So as in, you know,
that's what Quora taught me, by the way.
Right.
So if you look at 5,000 answers and you look at 365 days, even in 10 years, you don't get to 500,000 answers if you do one a day.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be 3,650 answers if you do one every day for 10 years. So I'm at 5,000 plus. So imagine, you know, it's that persistency, doing it. Same thing with YouTube video. I put a video every single day. It takes time. You have to dress up. You have to put the camera, et cetera, et cetera. The camera you can see right there. That's actually the stand. The camera is right here with me right now. And it'll go up after this. You know, make two videos, four videos. I don't know. We'll see.
So do you have, I mean, just one, I think maybe one or two questions before we let you go. Like, do you keep a script, at least a bullet, you know, like a bullet list? Like, these are the five things I will say on this topic, or?
Yeah, I do, of course. So I have a Trello board going for my ideas. So I keep a Trello board, you know, okay, these are the topics I want to record a video on. And then once the video date, like today, I'm going to be talking about Estonia. Today, I'm going to be talking about the World Bank, etc. So I've made some bullet points and I read through some articles and it's there. And I will go in front of the camera. And so it's not scripted as such, but I know what points to talk about.
So not the actual script, but you do have the bullet points and you have done some prior research there. Awesome. Awesome. Sounds great. I believe what's the best way to for people to connect with you?
It is my website. So there's a contact page. I'd be happy to connect. Please be very cognizant that I don't offer personal information on my website or through contact. If you had a payment that is stuck or if you want me to mentor you, etc. You know, I mean, my time is limited like everyone else's time. So I try to make the most efficient way of usage for it. And the most efficient way is, you know, one to many. The one-to-many medium, I think, is the best way. So, but you're happy to contact me. So the contact information is on my website. Everything is on my website.
Awesome, Faisal. Thank you so much. And we will include links to your podcast and Quora page and the blog and everything. Well, thank you so much for your time, Faisal. Wish you good luck with your YouTube project. And I'm sure you will do great on that as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irfan. Take care. Have a good one. Speak soon.
Speak soon.
Thank you for listening. For show notes and other resources, please refer to the description of the show.